I thank Brother Paul for his prayer on our behalf, as well as you. Thank you for moving forward. Anything is, it can be a little more scary when you're this close, but it does help as far as keeping us together here. Robert King Merton, put the Merton on the back, it's not my father-in-law, but Robert King Merton was a Columbia University sociologist. He just died back in 2003. And he's credited with inventing phrases such as focus groups, self-fulfilling prophecy, and one that we're pretty familiar with and probably hear quite often, role model. Now, a role model, according to dictionary.com, is a person whose behavior, example, or success is or can be emulated by others. Normally implied by this phrase, role model, is that a role model is to be a positive influence. However, by definition, a role model can be positive or negative. Also, by definition, I believe every person, and in particular adults, can be considered role models. In James 5 and 10 and 11, we have a man listed there that is to be a role model, or I believe is a role model for us. I want to read those verses there. James 5, 10, take my brother and the prophets who have spoken in the name of the Lord for an example, a model of suffering, affliction, and of patience. Behold, we count them happy which endure. Ye have heard of the patience of Job, and have seen the end of the Lord, that the Lord is very pitiful and of tender mercy. So for a title, if you want the title for the message, I would say Lessons from a Role Model. Job is remembered for the patience that he had during tremendous suffering, and certainly that is one area in which he was a positive role model. Now, patience, for some of us, may be something that we have very little of and really need to learn. I said maybe. I can't answer for you. I have to answer for myself. I would say that all of us need to continue to learn patience. I think the problem is that too often we want to learn patience quickly or instantly in our instant world that we live in. And doesn't that prove that we really need to learn it, since we want to learn it so quickly? God wants us to learn patience. He allows things sometimes in our lives to develop that patience. And I believe it's an important trait of a Christian. Another reason Job was a positive role model is that he was a man of integrity. In the chapter, the first part of the chapter, chapter 1 that Brother Paul read, verse 1, there was a man in the land of Uz whose name was Job, and that man was perfect and upright, and one that feared God and eschewed evil. Verses 4 and 5 tell how Job regularly offered burnt offerings to God on behalf of his children to cover any sin that they may have committed, and he was spiritually devoted. Then in verse 6, we know that Satan comes before God, and God, in describing Job, and Brother Paul referenced or referred to this, how God would, what would he say about us? But in describing Job there in verse 8, and the Lord said unto Satan, hast thou considered my servant Job, that there is none like him in the earth, a perfect and an upright man, one that feareth God and escheweth evil. And then in chapter 29, Job 29, we read of how he was respected by young and old alike, that he cared for the poor, the fatherless, the widow, the innocent, and those with physical difficulties. Chapter 31, we learn that Job had made a covenant with his eyes, purposing to be sexually pure, and we find that he faithfully kept his marriage vows and was honest before all. This is the kind of person Job had been, quite a man of integrity, which made it so hard, or all the harder, for him to understand, why are so many terrible things happening to me? With all that Job had, all that he was blessed with, 10 children, large amounts of livestock. He was the greatest of all the people of the East, yet he still maintained his integrity and was true to God. You know, sometimes a true test of our integrity is when we have much or plenty, more so than when we have little. Think about it. God wants us to have integrity. How are we when nobody's around? You know, years ago, or I shouldn't say several years back, not sure how many, but I quite often get into motels, especially during the summer with my work. But for a period of time, and I'm confessing something to you here tonight, I've taken care of with the Lord. But I struggled with that television sitting there and looking at things I shouldn't have. That's behind me, and I thank the Lord for that and give him the credit, because it's not on my own strength. But I'm saying that I still get in those motels. And so I have to really be on the alert. Rarely do I even turn it on for that purpose, and have to really be careful. And I say that because, you know, nobody's around. Nobody knows. God knows. What do we do when people aren't with us? It says something about integrity, whether we have much or little. A third way in which Job was a positive role model is that in spite of intense tribulation and suffering and unanswered questions by God, Job confirmed his commitment to the Lord at least 5 different times in the book of Job. We want to look at those statements of faith that he made and see what they can, or we can glean out of them what they would mean for us. The first one is in chapter 1. After Satan was allowed access to all that Job had, Satan quickly destroyed Job's livestock, his servants, and children. And it was like boom, 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 rapid fire. If you read that chapter, as soon as Satan had access to him, he just laid into it. And upon hearing that his children were dead, Job, there in chapter 1 and verse 20, he says, he rent his mantle and shaved his head and fell down on the ground and worshiped and said, "Naked came I out of my mother's womb, and naked shall I return thither. The Lord gave, and the Lord hath taken away. Blessed be the name of the Lord." Blessed be the name of the Lord. What is the thought for us in that statement of faith? Well, I believe this is at least one. We need to worship and love God for who he is, not what he gives. Worship and love God for who he is, not what he gives. When that is the case, our worship and our love for God will be strong no matter what happens, because God never changes. So our worship and our love for him will be strong when it's based on who he is instead of what he gives. It won't be affected by our circumstances or what we have or we don't have, because he's always the same. Second statement of faith that Job makes is in chapter 2. Job is still holding fast to his integrity, and God now allows Satan access to Job's body to physically harm him, except he can, as we know, he cannot take his life. Job, though suffering from painful boils and encouraged by his wife to relinquish his integrity, he replies to her suggestion by saying in verse 10 of chapter 2, "Thou speakest as one of the foolish women speakest, What? Shall we receive good at the hand of God, and shall we not receive evil? In all this, did not Job sin with his lips? Shall we receive good at the hand of God, and shall we not receive evil? Two things that we'd like to see from that statement of faith. First of all, faith in God does not guarantee all good things in this life. Just as lack of faith in God does not guarantee bad things in this life. There are a lot of people that have no faith in God that have a really good life in this life, physically speaking or materially speaking. Now they're going to face judgment. And there are a lot of believers that don't have a real good life in this life. Secondly, from that statement of faith, the New King James uses the word accept there instead of receive. And dwelling or thinking along that with that word, shall we accept good and not bad, is this thought. I believe we must learn to accept what we cannot change. We must learn to accept what we cannot change. This doesn't mean that we never wish things were different. It doesn't mean we condone sin, but we purpose to live on in God's peace concerning what we can't do anything about. The Serenity Prayer, I'm sure you're familiar with. I've seen it on plaques, maybe in a home somewhere. I was thinking of one that I did, but I'm not sure, but I know I've seen it. It deals with this same thought. It says, God, grant me the serenity or the peace, the quiet, the calmness, to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and wisdom to know the difference. Learning to accept what we cannot change. Job's third statement of faith, confirming his commitment to God, is found in chapter 13. And Job, in his response to his critical friends who just thought for sure that there was someone confessed sin in Job's life. There had to be some sin there. That's why he was suffering. Job declares in verse 15 of chapter 13, he says, though he slay me, speaking of God, yet will I trust in him, but I will maintain mine own ways before him. Verse 16, he also shall be my salvation, for an hypocrite shall not come before him. Though he slay me, yet will I trust in him. Job was still claiming his innocence before God. He knew he wasn't a hypocrite. What do we get from that statement of faith? Though God slay me, yet will I trust him? I believe it points us to unconditional trust in God. No strings attached. Most of us probably live our lives most of the time by the law of cause and effect. And I again went to dictionary.com to get that definition. It's the concept that an action or event will produce a certain response to the action in the form of another event. You know, if I do this, this will happen. If I do this, it will cause or have the effect of this. Now, most of us probably live our lives based on that. That's not wrong. The Bible's clear that we reap what we sow. There are consequences to actions. The choices we make bring results. You know, there's laws of the universe. If I jump off the roof of this building, I'm going to go, you know, that's cause and effect, unless the Lord miraculously steps in. However, the cause of the effect may not always be what we think. Now you got to listen closely here because you can almost lose yourself in these two words, cause and effect. And the cause of the effect may not always be what we think. Such was the case with Job. His friend said, it has to be sin because you're suffering so much, so there has to be sin. Sin is the cause of the effect, which is your suffering. Sometimes it is. In fact, Job even lived by that because he thought there was, he just couldn't understand. Because he thought, well, I don't think there's any sin in my life, so why am I suffering so much? Again, cause and effect. And then sometimes the effect of the cause may not always be what we think it would be or should be. Or when it should be. You know, if I do this, shouldn't this happen? It isn't always. Or when we think it should. In the case of Job, the concept of cause and effect was nowhere to be found, so to speak. You know, even if we can't answer all the questions we may have, or God is not answering our questions, and even if we can't see a cause and effect in action, I believe Job was saying still we need to hope in God, even on the death. Unconditional trust. A hope with no strings attached till I die. And even if God takes my life, I will hope and trust in Him. Quite a statement of faith that Job made. His fourth statement of faith is in chapter 19. Job, having no, by this point, suffered to the point and really had no more hope in this life, seemed that all were either against him or forsaking him. He was ready to die. But wanting his commitment and his statement of faith to still be clear, there in chapter 19, and he says in verse 23, why do you persecute me as God and are not satisfied with my flesh? That's 22. Verse 23, oh, that my words were now written. Oh, that they were printed in a book, that they were graven with an iron pen and laid in the rock forever. For I know that my Redeemer liveth, and that he shall stand at the latter day upon the earth. And though after my skin worms destroy this body, yet in my flesh shall I see God, whom I shall see for myself, and mine eyes shall behold, and not another, though my reins be consumed within me. Despite the accusations, Job was confident that in standing before God after death, he was ready to go. He wanted to die. He didn't have any more hope in this life, yet he was confident that in standing before God, that his Redeemer would not let him down. Job's statement is one of certainty. Certain that his soul would be redeemed by his Redeemer, certain of the resurrection of the body, certain of the second coming of Christ who would come back again onto the earth. What we can get from that in our own lives is, may our statement of faith be just as certain as Job's. If you look at those verses that I read, how he says, I will see him myself. It's personal. He knew in his mind. He had a personal Redeemer. And may our statement of faith be just as certain, and we can say that I know that my Redeemer lives, and I know that he's coming back, and I know that I'll see him. Or I'll see God. And then like Job, may we want others to know that we know. In other words, it'll be evident to other people. We'll share it. We'll want that statement of faith, our life statement, to be known by others. The last statement of faith Job makes that we want to see is in chapter 23. And Job is still wanting to plead his innocence before God, but he's not knowing where to find him. Maybe I'll just quickly read down through some the verses there, beginning at verse 1. Then Job answered and said, "Even today is my complaint bitter. My stroke is heavier than my groaning. Know that I knew where I might find him, that I might come even to his seat. I would order my cause before him and fill my mouth with arguments. I would know the words which he would answer me and understand what he would say unto me. Will he plead against me with his great power? No, but he would put strength in me. There the righteous might dispute with him. So should I be delivered forever from my judge. Behold, I go forward, but he is not there. And backward, but I cannot perceive him. On the left hand, where he doth work, but I cannot behold him. He hideth himself in the right hand, and I cannot see him." Job said, "I don't know where he's at. I can't sense his presence. I don't know where to find God." But then look what he says in verse 10. "But he knoweth the way that I take. When he hath tried me, I shall come forth as gold." So even though Job is there saying, "Look, I look to my right, my left, and I can't seem to sense God's presence. I go forward and backward, and there's not God." Somehow, he still knew God, knew his life. God was present. He said, "I know," or "he knoweth my way. He knoweth the way that I take. He knoweth the course of my life." He knew God was there. He just couldn't grasp him. And then in verses 11 and 12, says, "My foot hath kept his steps, his way have I kept and not declined, neither have I gone back from the commandment of his lips. I have esteemed the words of his mouth more than my necessary food." In other words, Job, he said, I have continued to obey God. The most important thing in his life was more important than food. To obey God. In spite of all that had happened. And he knew that God knew that because God knew his life. We can take from this statement of faith, I believe, several things. One is that God knows. Flat, short statement. God knows. Secondly, God knows our lives. It doesn't really matter what I don't know about you or what you don't know about me, but God surely knows it all. God knows it all. And thirdly, God always, always judges right. Always. And Job was counting on that in the end. Once there was an old man who lived in a tiny village. Although poor, he was envied by all, for he owned a beautiful white horse. Even the king coveted his treasure. A horse like this had never been seen before. Such was its splendor, its majesty, its strength. People offered fabulous prices for the steed, but the old man always refused. "This horse is not a horse to me," he would tell them. "It is a person." Sounds like some we have today with the way animals are treated at times. But at any rate, we'll better let that alone. He thought a lot of his horse. "He is a friend, not a possession. How could you sell a friend?" The man was poor and the temptation was great, but he never sold the horse. One morning he found that the horse was not in the stable. All the village came to see him. "You old fool," they scoffed. "We told you that someone would steal your horse. We warned you that you would be robbed. You are so poor, how could you ever hope to protect such a valuable animal? It would have been better to have sold him. You could have gotten whatever price you wanted. No amount would have been too high. Now the horse is gone and you've been cursed with misfortune." The old man responded, "Don't speak too quickly. Say only that the horse is not in the stable. That is all we know. The rest is judgment. If I've been cursed or not, how can you know? How can you judge?" The people contested, "Don't make us out to be fools. We may not be philosophers, but great philosophy is not needed. The simple fact that your horse is gone is a curse." The old man spoke again, "All I know is that the stable is empty. And the horse is gone. The rest I don't know. Whether it be a curse or a blessing, I can't say. All we can see is a fragment. Who can say what will come next?" The people of the village laughed. They thought the man was crazy. They had always thought he was a fool. If he wasn't, he would have sold the horse and lived off the money. But instead, He was a poor woodcutter, an old man still cutting firewood and dragging it out of the forest and selling it. He lived hand to mouth in the misery of poverty. Now he had proven that he was indeed a fool. After 15 days, the horse returned. He hadn't been stolen. He had run away into the forest. Not only had he returned, he had brought a dozen wild horses with him. Once again, the village people gathered around the woodcutter and spoke, "Old man, you were right, and we were wrong. What we thought was a curse was a blessing. Please forgive us." The man responded, "Once again, you go too far. Say only that the horse is back. State only that a dozen horses returned with him, but don't judge. How do you know if this is a blessing or not? You only see a fragment. Unless you know the whole story, how can you judge? You read only one page of a book. Can you judge the whole book? You read only one word of a phrase. Can you understand the entire phrase? Life is so vast that you judge all of life with one page or one word. All you have is a fragment. Don't say that this is a blessing. No one knows. I am content with what I know. I am not perturbed by what I don't." "Maybe the old man is right," they said to one another, so they said little. But down deep they knew he was wrong. They knew it was a blessing. 12 wild horses had returned with one horse. With a little bit of work, the animals could be broken and trained and sold for much money. The old man had a son, an only son. The young man began to break the wild horses. After a few days, he fell from one of the horses and broke both legs. Once again, the villagers gathered around the old man and cast their judgments. "You were right," they said. "You proved you were right. The dozen horses were not a blessing. They were a curse. Your only son has broken his legs, and now in your old age, you have no one to help you. Now you are poorer than ever." The old man spoke again. "You people are obsessed with judging. Don't go so far. Say only that my son broke his legs. Who knows if it is a blessing or a curse? No one knows. We only have a fragment. Life comes in fragments." So happened that a few weeks later, the country engaged in war against a neighboring country. All the young men of the village were required to join the army. Only the son of the old man was excluded because he was injured. Once again, the people gathered around the old man, crying and screaming because their sons had been taken. There was little chance that they would return. The enemy was strong, and the war would be a losing struggle. They would never see their sons again. "You were right, old man," they wept. "God knows you were right. This proves that your son's accident was a blessing. His legs may be broken, but at least he is with you. Our sons are gone forever." The old man spoke again. "It is impossible to talk with you. You always draw conclusions. No one knows. Say only this: your sons had to go to war and mine did not. No one knows if it is a blessing or a curse. No one is wise enough to know. Only God knows." I would suggest or say to us that there are times that we must say, "Only God knows." There are times we just can't say whether something is a curse or a blessing. But I believe we need to say, "God knows," as Job did, and unconditionally trust him. I believe Job had learned that truth, even to a greater extent than before. If you turn over to chapter 42, you might even say this is another statement of faith, the closing chapter of what Job said. Chapter 42, "Then Job answered the Lord and said, 'I know that thou canst do everything, and that no thought can be withholden from thee. Who is he that hideth counsel without knowledge? Therefore have I uttered that I understood not. Things too wonderful for me, which I knew not.'" Job said, "I didn't know all this, but you know. Here I beseech thee, and I will speak. I will demand of thee, and declare thou unto me. I have heard of thee by the hearing of the ear, but now mine eye seeth thee." Job still really hadn't gotten any answers, had he, as to why he was suffering. But Job once had heard of God, knew about God. By the end of his life, or the end of this time of suffering, he had experienced God and had a little bit better grasp about the sovereignty of God, the majesty, the goodness, the greatness. And Job had to say, you know what? Only you know. Unconditionally trust him. We have to, though he slay me, though he slay you. You know, that's not that God's out to harm us. That's not the thought of that. That's an utter dependence upon God, no matter what. I will trust him. That's what Job was saying. Should he even take my life and for a purpose of his knowing? Statements of faith, may they help us as we go from day to day.